Hi, and welcome back to our second episode. One of the most obvious changes in work has been the development of platforms for organizing it. Think of Uber, Amazon, or Deliveroo. In the last episode, we talked about how changes in work were impacting inequality at the national level in China and Southern Africa. In this episode, we're going to discuss the platform economy at the global level. What are conditions like for workers in the platform economy, and how does this vary across the globe? To discuss this issue, I'm joined by Sarah Kassem, a lecturer at the University of Tübingen and an expert on labour organisation in the platform economy. Just before we get started, one piece of terminology we use in this interview is Taylorized. So Taylorism is a kind of scientific way of managing workers to maximise the efficiency of a factory or a workplace. So the term Taylorized means that it's been optimised in this way. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining us. Could you just start by telling us about your work?
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be talking about it. So, my research really stems from, I'm very curious about contemporary developments within our political economy. And when we want to study contemporary developments, we're realizing more and more the power, the economic, political, societal, technological power of digital platforms. So essentially, this is what really drew me to wanting to study digital platforms. And by digital platforms, we understand basically corporations that are based on instrumentalizing the infrastructure of the internet in order to mediate between different groups, mediating labor power or labor products or services. So if we're going to think of platforms nowadays, Amazon is at the top of that list. We have Uber, we have Airbnb, all of these companies essentially. So my interest really stemmed from wanting to understand how do these platforms and to what extent do these platforms shape and reshape the world of work and workers, which is actually my ongoing project right now. And I hope next spring it will be out with Bristol University Press, is a book that I'm writing called Work and Alienation in the Platform Economy, Amazon and the Power of Organization. And in this book, I then ask the questions of how does the platform economy organize workers in different ways, but also really how workers claim their agency. So it's a very worker-centered research of trying to humanize essentially the workforces.
Fantastic. That sounds like really worthwhile work. So your research tends to focus on two case studies, which is Amazon Warehouses and Amazon Mechanical Turk. Just to start us off, very briefly, what does this kind of work look like and what do we know about the people that work there?
So when we look at the platform economy, we can actually see that not all platforms organize workers in the same way. So essentially we can distinguish based on two criteria. One is the nature of the platform. So are we saying that the worker is really tied to their physical geographical location? I mean, of course, all workers are tied to their material context. But what I mean by that is, for example, the Amazon warehouses. A worker has to go to the warehouse, has to labor within the warehouse, and then goes back home. Whereas we also have web-based workers, such as the Amazon Mechanical Turk worker. So who is the Amazon Mechanical Turk worker? It is someone who does basically online outsourcing of microtasks. And this worker can be located anywhere in the world and can do these online tasks as long as they have access to the internet and a device by which they can access the platform itself. So we can really see two natures of platform. The other thing to distinguish between the two case studies is that in the case of the Amazon warehouse workers, they're really more organized in a traditional way in the sense that they receive a fixed hourly wage. So they know basically more or less what their salary will be. Whereas as a gig worker, which is the case for Amazon Mechanical Turk, but also the case for an Uber worker, for instance, is that their income essentially depends on how many tasks they complete and essentially are accepted. So there's an income insecurity that comes with that. So what I wanted to look at is I wanted to have two case studies that are fundamentally different. Different in the nature of platform and different in the nature of work. And this is why I chose the Amazon warehouse study, where we have location-based traditional time wage workers, and then the Amazon Mechanical Turk case study, where we have web-based gig workers. Of course, this is not an exhaustive study, but it's just to get sort of an idea of the different ways they're organized. And the Amazon warehouse workers, what we can imagine is essentially these are workers that are organized almost factory-like, But rather than producing commodities, what they do is they circulate the commodities. So Amazon essentially started as an online bookstore and then expanded to what we know it today as this everything store. And when someone orders an order at home, then along this hyper-tailorized circulation line, which means essentially that a big task is divided in all these little tasks of someone that has to pick the item and then pack the item and so forth. The idea is to make this as efficient as possible. So it's kind of like the factory work brought to the 21st century. The Amazon Mechanical Turk worker is essentially what they're selling there is their labor power. So they're doing these online tasks, they're micro tasks. So these micro tasks are things like, for example, watching a video and then kind of summarizing what kind of feelings you had while you were watching this video. Were you happy or were you angry? Or you're seeing a series of pictures and you're supposed to choose all the instruments, for example. So the idea is as you're doing these tasks, you realize that it's really based on you having human intelligence. And that's why the tasks are actually called human intelligence tasks. Now, Amazon Mechanical Turk was essentially developed for internal use within Amazon. They realized that as Amazon was growing in the early 2000s, that they needed to identify duplicates on their page or typos or update book covers. And at the time, they realized, okay, we're not at a stage yet to have this automated or through artificial intelligence, but we need human labor. And then basically, this was expanded beyond Amazon, that any corporation, university, it's actually used quite often for university surveys and research. But really anyone can post a task on Amazon Mechanical Turk and then anyone around the world will try to answer that or fulfill that task to get an income.
I think that's a really useful comparison. Just on the Mechanical Turk, when it comes to discussions about remote work, there are lots of people that are worried about outsourcing. They're worried that a large number of jobs could at least in principle be done literally anywhere on the globe with an internet connection, and about what this means for jobs in countries like the UK and Germany. Are there limitations, especially legal limitations, or can these workers literally be anywhere?
I would say at the current time and age that we're in, these workers can be located anywhere. I mean, the idea of outsourcing tasks per se is not something that is unique to the platform economy. We've seen this with also traditional kind of work where it was possible for capital to outsource these tasks in order to cut on labor costs. It has done so, whether it's in terms of production or in terms of services. So essentially what the platform economy does is it takes it to the additional dimension of laboring remotely through the internet. And what we see with these tasks, essentially, there has been a lot of research on this, is that while capital, so those who are asking or have a lot of tasks to be fulfilled, that they're predominantly located in the global north. Whereas, as we know with outsourcing, the majority of workers are located in the global south. So if you're going to talk about the implications that come with it, there are most definitely implications and consequences also, because in a way, it reproduces a race to the bottom. And there are implications that come also with gig work, because you're classified as an independent contractor. So essentially, you're not even recognized as a worker per se. So what this means is that the platform economy essentially also normalizes this job flexibility. I mean, initially, it was really celebrating flexibility. And in doing so, it also normalizes precarious working conditions. And this, I think, carries a lot of implications for places in the world, especially in the global south, where we also already have a large portion of the economy being an informal economy and a large portion of even the formal economy where workers are struggling to improve their working conditions. And now you have these additional platforms that essentially contribute to that. But at the same time, it does need to be said that for many workers, this is seen as something also positive because it is an income. And if we then bear in mind also the exchange rate, you know, if these tasks are posted in US dollars and you're located somewhere like India or the Philippines or somewhere in Africa, whether it's Northern Africa or anywhere else in Africa, then this exchange rate does make a difference for an income.
We're going to go on to talk now about what you've written about kind of the central role in the platform in organizing workers and kind of organizing different kinds of workers differently. Could you just explain to us kind of what your broad argument is there?
Yeah, so when it comes, as you've highlighted, one part of my work is really what is the role of the platform here? And how does it organize? Like, what are similarities, but also where do the differences lie? And essentially what I do there is I'm very focused on studying alienation and to study how workers are alienated in different ways. Now, when it comes to the labor activity itself, so the kind of work that workers are doing, we do see certain similarities. We can see that, generally speaking, in the cases of Amazon Warehouses and Amazon Mechanical Turk, because these two would be regarded on the labor market essentially as manual workers or low-skilled workers per se on the formal labor market, is that when it comes to these kinds of activities, that they are being hyper-tailorized. So whether you are in the warehouse along this kind of circulation line, or whether you're doing an online task, you're really doing this very specific task. And you don't really know what happens, or it is not your job to do the part before, nor is it your job to do the part after. Of course, you can be shifted somewhere else, both in the warehouse, or you decide to do a different task where you're located somewhere else along this virtual production line. But essentially, the labor activity is hyper-tailorized. The other thing is that is very clear when it comes to platform economy is that the labor process becomes algorithmically managed. So the role of algorithmic management becomes a central component of organizing the labor relations themselves. Now, what does this algorithmic management look like? This does differ depending on whether you are a location-based worker, in this specific case, the Amazon warehouse worker, or you are an Amazon Mechanical Turk worker. Because in the former case, you do have something like a hand scanner, for example. Like if I'm a picker, it means I have a hand scanner that tells me like where to find the next item that needs to be picked. And you are connected to the tech, to the system. And this system can basically measure how long you're taking for a task and basically how long you're off a task. And in doing so, let's say there is a degree of technological surveillance. At the same time, though, because it is location-based and you're within a warehouse with managers going around, there's also a degree of social surveillance. So, for example, depending on where you are in the world, managers could walk up to you and ask you to stop talking to your colleague. Now, these are additional dimensions because it's location-based. Now, productivity is also measured through a units per hour rate within these warehouses. So this is where tech also plays a really big role, is that you are told how many products, in this case, to pick within an hour. In the case of the Amazon Mechanical Turk worker, you are from the very start connected to the internet and connected to technology that then also, you know, calculates how long or counts how long you need for a task. This is crucial because this can affect whether you're going to get paid or not if you did it within the time frame. But then it also ends up picking up on whether your task was approved or not. And through this, you have a rating. And based on your rating, you might have access to certain tasks in the future, and you may actually be left out of the labor force altogether. So we can see here how the algorithmic management plays a role when it comes to surveillance. It plays a role when it comes to also having more gigs or not. And essentially, it is there to monitor your productivity. So this is one dimension where we can see there's similarities, but also differences. And another quite obvious one is also when it comes to the kind of products that you're dealing with. So when in the warehouse, you have a very material product. So you can see, okay, I'm picking an item that is going to be packed and sent to the consumer or to the person who ordered it. Whereas in the Amazon Mechanical Turk platform, it is immaterial. And this plays a role because, again, you are alienated in a way that you don't really know what you're producing data, but you don't know for what it's being produced. And we know now that a lot of it does go to machine learning algorithms to train AI. So essentially you are somewhere across the world that and contributing to these algorithms, but not knowing exactly what the specific function is. And at the same time, Amazon Mechanical Turks are also very survey oriented. So sometimes it's just market survey or for universities and so forth. Another dimension where we see that these two platforms actually are different is when it comes to the working day. Now here, this is where it becomes really interesting, because with certain dimensions, we can say that the platform economy is almost a trendsetter, like when it comes to algorithmic management. But in other cases, we see that the platform economy is actually reproducing trends that are on the labor market. Like if we're going to talk about precarious working conditions, the platform economy didn't invent precarious working conditions, but it's reproducing them and contributing to them. In the same way, also this extension of the working day to different degrees across the world with COVID-19, we've seen what happens when the task that you have to do, you do it from home. And what happens then, depending also on whether, you know, what your sex, what your gender, what your race is, how this impacts how you balance the different tasks that you have to do. So for instance, if you are an Amazon Mechanical Turk worker who also has to perform the reproductive labor that's going on in the household. So if at the same time I have children now and I have to take care of my children and do online work, then this affects basically the work-life balance and work encroaches on the home. And we've seen this, like I said, with COVID-19. Whereas in a warehouse, essentially, you are going to the warehouse, you know that there's physical and temporal bounds to your working day. Of course, though, you can get additional shifts depending on the peak season and so forth. But these are several dimensions in which we can see similarities, but also some differences.
That's really insightful and really clear. Thank you. You mentioned this concept of alienation. Could you just say a bit more about what you mean by that and why it's really important?
Yeah, absolutely. So since my work is really interested in how platforms organize workers and workers organize themselves, I'm rather convinced that alienation does play a big role because it affects how we perceive our labor. So if you basically regard the process of laboring itself as something that is strange to you, as something that is independent to you, as something that is not of your own product, this can affect later on whether you organize or not. And we've seen a lot of studies now also being done about how technology adds to this dimension, because in a way, you know, this is the whole debate on basically, am I in control or is technology in control of the labor process? And here we see also that with the degree of algorithmic management, this becomes an even bigger issue because, for example, if you have to communicate with an online platform and there is no physical supervisor to communicate to, how does this then affect how you perceive the laboring? But also, how does this affect you trying to organize for better working conditions? So essentially, what I do by studying alienation is there's four different categories. I'm curious to how we perceive our labor activity, or workers perceive their labor activity, how they perceive the result of it, essentially the product, how they perceive also their working day. You know, have we reached a stage where we are defining ourselves through work and also defining our day through work? So is work kind of absorbed, let's say, has work absorbed the different dimensions of our lives, but also has it affected how we perceive others? Do we see others as necessarily always competition, or do we understand the other person as being a fellow worker, someone that I identify with, someone that I can, you know, form solidarity with in order to improve my working conditions? So in a way, alienation really brings together these two dimensions. But when we study alienation, what's really important is to not inflate it with all meaning. So when we study, or when I've studied now Amazon and the relations of alienation, we can see that Amazon or platforms attempt to alienate workers across these different dimensions. But this doesn't mean that workers have lost their agency. It doesn't mean that workers now are so alienated that they don't organize or recognize their interests. What we do see is that actually, as a worker, workers do have their own agency, they have their own consciousness, they have their own subjectivities, and around these points, they then form solidarity and do organize, in fact.
That brings me on to the next question really perfectly. So how does that manifest itself, these workers claiming their agency?
Yeah, so I know that this was the question that you said you thought was quite interesting. Now, when it comes to how workers organize themselves, we do see also, again, that there is a specific role of the nature of the platform as well as a role when it comes to the nature of work. So when we look at Amazon workers, what I said are not only location-based, but again, receive a time wage. So this is important to keep in mind, because once you're classified as an independent contractor and once your wage is just never guaranteed, this will obviously have consequences as to how you organize and to what extent you can organize, because essentially you lose a gig, you lose a wage with every time. So let's talk first about the Amazon warehouse workers. As I've mentioned, they are organized more traditionally, like what we know from, you know, factories and so forth. And in fact, the fact that they are location-based actually proves as an opportunity, or it can actually play a very important role in bringing workers together. Because if you see your co-workers, if you interact with your co-workers, it affects, you know, forming that solidarity and organizing. So this is why it actually comes as no surprise that workers in the Amazon warehouses are increasingly unionizing or have unionized. So this really depends, though, on where the warehouse is located. So in Europe, again, depending on the location, in Germany, it is common, or it is possible, let's say, because it is constitutionally protected and enshrined, that a worker unionizes. In the specific case of the US, as we know with the ongoing battles that are going on there, we see that workers are trying to, or they are, you know, forming solidarity in order to gain union recognition and to pass successful votes, as we've seen in JFK 8 in Staten Island, whereas in Bessemer, Alabama, we see that the struggle is still going on. So essentially, one dimension is by being physically in the same location, it plays a role in forming solidarity and organizing. We've also seen how, for example, in the context of COVID-19, because you were physically in the same location, you were exposed to health risks. And this actually pushed a lot of workers around the world, both Global North and Global South, to walk out and to organize. So when we look at the forms of organization, Amazon warehouses, we see that it is more traditional in the sense that we have national, we also have transnational unions. But when it comes to union organization, it's not always also the classical traditional union anymore. But also with the case of JFK 8 in Staten Island, we've seen that it can also be more grassroots. And this in turn also affects, or is affected by, the intersectional elements of a labor struggle. So if we're going to talk about the composition of the workforce in Amazon warehouses, but also elsewhere in the platform economy, the platform economy constitutes part of the larger economy. So it does not operate in isolation to the larger economy. But as I've said, these workers are always materially bound to their geographic location. So this means that the composition of a warehouse, for instance, is affected by, or reflects essentially, the composition of the labor market. So if a warehouse opens in a state or near a city that has a predominantly Black workforce, we will see this reflected in the warehouse. And in this specific case, this can act as a foundation to form solidarity. In the case of Germany, it's also similar. The warehouses will have a composition that reflects the wider labor market. And in a way, these intersectional dimensions, they can prove to be an obstacle in certain cases. And by that, I mean, do you have organizers that speak different languages? Are you on a visa? Are you on a residence permit? Because if your visa or your work permit or your residence permit is tied to your employer, this will obviously affect to what extent you are organizing. It also is affected by the kind of contract you're on. Are you on a fixed contract or permanent contract? So you see there's a lot of different dimensions here. Some scholarship has suggested or has proven that when it comes to management in the warehouses, these are predominantly going to be rather white and also men. Whereas some studies suggest that the composition of the manual workforce will be rather people of color and also have women more predominantly represented. So as I said, this can both essentially, like at first, can act as an obstacle because you have to invest more in providing things in different languages. But we've seen this happen in the US, that it is possible. But also it can be absolutely instrumental and foundational in actually forming solidarity and understanding that we are together in this experience and we identify with one another and we need to organize. Now, when it comes to the Amazon Mechanical Turk workers, it's a whole different story. It's a whole different story because you are web-based and you are a gig worker. So essentially the idea of going on strike becomes very difficult if you are an online gig worker, because if you decide, I will not take on a task, I'm not going to work this task, because of the race to the bottom and because it's this international division of labor, someone else is going to do that task. And because you are, the platform is designed in a way that it's almost as if you are in your own cubicle somewhere on the internet, with no common place to communicate with someone else. So you don't have that physical dimension anymore. But the thing that is interesting is just because you don't have that dimension doesn't mean workers haven't found it elsewhere. So what we see is that the technology that alienates these workers is also the one on which they have based their communication. So Reddit is a huge page on which these workers will be, and they will communicate with each other there. Or Our Hit Stop is another workers forum. One huge page or one browser extension that has been important has been Turk Opticon, which was actually created by two scholars, and Lily Irani and Six Silberman. And essentially, the idea of the Turk Opticon is, okay, you know what, requesters, this is what they're called, the people who post tasks or the corporations or whoever that posts tasks. If requesters get to rate us, we want to be able to rate them. So on these different platforms, forums, browser extensions, what workers do is they actually like communicate with one another. They try to alert one another which person or which requester is likely to pay your wage and approve your task and which one isn't. Which one should you actually try to search for their tasks because they pay higher? Because on Amazon Mechanical Turk, a gig could be posted for as little as 1 cent. Of course, this doesn't mean that all the tasks are 1 cent, but these tasks exist. So you want to alert one another also when you know a requester that might actually post a task for $5, for instance. So in a way, we see that workers have also claimed already existing or newly formed pages in order to communicate with one another. And in a way, they form solidarity. So although you would assume that, you know, if it's so competitive, why would you try to help the other person? But we see that there is a solidarity that has formed based on their class interests, essentially. And the dimensions of the intersectional dimensions here also of gender and race, they do play a role to the extent that, as I've mentioned, that digital labor platforms, the online ones, microtasking, such as Amazon Mechanical Turk, but not only Amazon Mechanical Turk, we have a lot of workers located in the Global South.
Do you think then it's fair to say that the Mechanical Turk workers have less power when it comes to this kind of negotiation, or is it just a different kind of power?
I would say it's quite difficult to evaluate sort of qualitatively, let's say, or quantitatively the dimensions of their power. To a certain extent, it is a different one. And it is clear that because of, if a platform defines itself basically as we are a gig platform, whether they do so explicitly or implicitly, it clearly creates these boundaries for workers. And we see this going on in the labor struggle, that whether it's unions, labor organizations, scholars, etc., researchers, that the first and foremost step has to be that these workers are actually reclassified. So the claim is that they are actually misclassified as an independent contractor and they should be reclassified as a worker. Because if you are an independent contractor, you can just essentially take away rights and benefits that have been fought for over the last centuries. And so the first step is to reclassify these workers to then improve the working conditions. And actually, we have had a lot of, I would say, development going on in this in recent years. Just in at the end of 2021, at least the European Union has put together a directive on improving working conditions in platform work. And one of the most central aspects has been to reclassify these workers. So I would say that there is a move in trying to reclassify these workers, and that this would in turn impact their power. But that essentially the way that the platform is organized has, unfortunately, these additional elements of how much a worker can do to improve the working conditions at this platform without undoing the business model on which this platform is based in the first place. Whereas with the Amazon warehouses, we see that Amazon is essentially also disrupting more traditional parts of the economy, right? So whether it's retail or logistics, we already have these things existing. And now Amazon comes in and wants to also, to a certain extent, redefine the rules or be a trendsetter within these industries. So because they are also geographically bound to a certain location, these workers, they can or they have to also navigate the political economic conditions, the regulations, the laws that are there to organize. Whereas if you are an online worker who is also a gig worker, then, you know, the question is, according to who's, like, based on what would you get a minimum wage? According to whom? And who would actually be the one to monitor this process? So I think there's a lot of work being done now in trying to push for this and to try to figure out how you could really implement a minimum wage, for example, on these online platforms.
And I guess it's also especially hard in that case, because if it's defined in terms of tasks rather than time, it's quite difficult to enforce a minimum wage, I guess.
I think this always, when it comes to the working conditions, I think it will depend always on whose perspective you're looking at. If it's a corporation or a platform that really defines itself, as you just said, as we are a gig platform, I mean, keep in mind that this is really the model in which they've built their entire business, right? Is that, you know, you have a car around, you can drive, why not make some extra money by driving someone? The idea isn't that you are necessarily committed full time. At least this is how it was, or in theory, it is advertised. However, must not be the case, because when you do start looking at the composition of workers who are also gig workers, sometimes it is their full-time job. Sometimes it is almost a second job or their side job. And sometimes it's about just wanting to do having some additional income. This is what we see with mechanical task workers, that it could be really, it could span any sort of category. Now, just because it is, let's say, not based on a minimum wage, it doesn't mean it must not be based on a minimum wage. So as I've said, there's been these initiatives now to try to implement a minimum wage, or let's say start this process. I think what will be really interesting is to see how what this will look like, actually. And as you said, does it redefine the platform or does it replace the platform?
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting thing for us to keep an eye on. Just picking up on one thing you said earlier, in terms of the platform where workers can rate the person that gives them a task, is the idea then that if this company that's offering the tasks gets a bad rating, then that less workers will take the tasks that they offer, and that this is a way to put pressure on the company to improve? Is that the thinking here?
So on the one hand, as a worker, you always receive a rating after you've completed a task, and then you sort of have this almost like a task bar that is visible when you're trying to basically work a new task, because the requester can limit, for instance, the tasks according to, I want someone who has at least a 95% approval rating, in a way that Uber works, that, you know, when you request an Uber ride, you can see, oh, this driver has 4.9 out of 5 stars when it comes to reviews. So I think this reviewing system has essentially, or increasingly, is playing a more and more important role. Now the idea of this, by allowing workers to rate in turn the requester, on the one hand, it is sort of like, yes, to alert other workers. And I mean, you would hope that this would mean that they would increase the gig reward. This is what also Amazon calls it, a reward. But I'm not sure to what extent this actually takes place, because you are talking about a global workforce and essentially reproducing and participating in this race to the bottom. So it could be that you have certain workers who try to avoid these tasks and manage to do so. But in a way, I would assume at least that a lot of these tasks still get done. So we can hope that over time, this will actually impact the requesters in in paying higher tasks. I think this is something also like we will have to watch. I mean, for now, from my understanding, Amazon Mechanical Turk has actually introduced to see the rating of the requester themselves so that you can actually know what is the probability that by doing this task, I will get paid. Because essentially what you do with Amazon Mechanical Turk is you work the task and you submit the task, but the task has to be approved. And only when it's approved, do you get the payment. But based on the participation agreement, basically the requester can still use your task. So the labor that you've put into it, but not pay you if they decide to reject the task. So you have a lot of different complex dimensions going on there. And I would hope that also by sort of supporting these workers and highlighting these conditions. And I think it is a big deal, let's say, that more and more people are becoming aware of these labor relations, that this will essentially or hopefully add some pressure in increasing the wage that you would get on a gig.
Wow, I did not realize how exploitative that system was. So then, what are the key lessons that policymakers should draw from this about how we can improve working conditions?
So one thing about the exploitative conditions that you just mentioned, I think one thing we have to highlight when we talk about these online platforms that do digital labor, like Amazon Mechanical Turk, is also that, I mean, essentially when people started to do research on Amazon Mechanical Turk workers, a lot of the assumption was going to be that people, that workers, would actually highlight how much they dislike the platform. But in a lot of cases also, what we can see is that these tasks also provide for labor opportunities, let's say, for people who are also marginalized and left out of the formal employment market. So in a way, because the barriers to join such a platform are so low, it does allow, or the gates are open, let's say, for workers to labor on these platforms. So it's very interesting to see how the different perceptions of work is on these platforms. And essentially, when I was doing my research and I was asking workers, would you rather like to see Amazon Mechanical Turk replaced or improved? I think each and every worker actually answered with improved, because it is a source of income at the end of the day. And I think this leads very well to your question about what should we do about this, or what is to be done about this. And I think that at this stage, we can see how platforms, as I said, are their power, whether it's political, economic, societal, technological, is increasing. And we've seen this also exacerbated by the COVID-19 context, where we can see that the digital mediation of social relations, but also labor relations, is increasingly playing a role. So we see that the platforms are players on the field now. So the question is, what can we do about it? And I think in many cases, there's a lot to be said about regulation. Now, when we talk about regulation, I would say there's different dimensions there. One huge aspect of regulation has been in relation to taxation. And we've seen also that in 2021, G7 actually concluded that multinational corporations were to pay, or are to pay, at least 15% in tax regardless of their sales location. So this is already a huge step, is that, you know, corporations, we always hear about how, you know, Google or Amazon or whoever, a platform essentially, you know, paid very low taxes. So one dimension is to try to tax these corporations. But even here, I think we have to always be critical and see it's one thing to propose and to put this in place. And the next step will be to see how it is actually implemented and monitored, and whether these corporations are going to find loopholes actually in these directives or decisions. So one aspect I would say is taxation. One aspect is also in relation to subsidies. There's some studies being done also about how a corporation like Amazon really benefits from subsidies. Essentially, the idea is, why not open Amazon warehouse over here, and the city or the state, depending on where you are in the world, might decide to subsidize it, because with a new warehouse come thousands of new jobs. So we see also how what the role of the state here is. In certain dimensions, we can say that actually, you know, the lack of regulation facilitated the growth of the platform economy, and now we need sort of states to step in or organizations to step in to try to regulate it again. So this is really with regards to, say, the economic power and political power of platforms. But I think also with my interest in mind, when it comes to workers, there has to be improvements being done when it comes to their working conditions, especially when it comes to things like health and safety for location-based platform workers, such as the Amazon warehouse workers. But also there has to be this reclassification of workers, because if you basically do not even recognize the people you employ as your workers, you know, it becomes even more difficult to fight for improvements of their labor rights or benefits, because you're excluded from this labor force to begin with. I think also a huge dimension will be, as we've seen or we are currently witnessing with the labor struggles in the US, is this protection and of unions and of labor organization in general, that you can basically form a collective with other workers without fearing that you will lose your job because you're doing so. And I think in our neoliberal moment right now, this is playing an increasing role, especially with rising inequalities and the inflation going on and everything that's going on around the world right now, is that this question of how do we as workers become also part of the process and organize in order to improve our working conditions.
Perfect. Thanks so much for speaking to us today, Sarah. It's been really, really interesting.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. And it would really help us out if you could share this episode on social media or with anyone who might be interested, or leave us a 5-star review on whichever platform you're listening to this. Our next episode will be about algorithms and how they're changing the way that workers are managed at work. See you again next time.